Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Summit highlights impact of literacy on economy. Drawing on her own love of learning, Texas First Lady Cecilia Abbott addressed the importance of reading at the Literaries Summit Tuesday. The gathering was called Reading is Power Advancing Communities. It drew educators, business people, elected officials, and other dignitaries, was presented by the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin at the CEED building and Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Abbott was introduced by Don Evans, former U.S. Secretary of Commerce. Quoting Frederick Douglass, Abbott said, "Once you learn to read, you will be forever free." Those were the words of Frederick Douglass, a man born into slavery, a man who fought against the chains of ignorance and helped to set our nation free. It is so easy to take for granted the incredible gift you were given when you were taught to read, Abbott said. Growing up in San Antonio, both her parents were educators, so she was raised with a love of learning. "I knew from a young age that education was the foundation for my future success. I eventually completed my college education at the University of St. Thomas in Houston. As a former principal at schools in Houston and Austin, I have seen firsthand the difference that the gift of literacy makes," Abbott said. The daughter of Cecilia and Greg Abbott, Audrey, has begun her professional career and is getting married soon. She said it seemed like only yesterday that Audrey was learning to read. "When a child learns to read, a world of dreams opens up for them," Abbott said. "We have no doubt that our daughter will live her dreams, but Greg and I have that same wish for every child in Texas. We strive to have every child in Texas reading and writing at or above grade level by the third grade. This is so important. Our children must learn to read so that they can read to learn. One key is having excellent teachers in every classroom, and that is why the state is investing billions of dollars more in our teachers and in our schools. As a former teacher, I know parent involvement is one of the biggest factors for student success. But it's not just children who need assistance with literacy. It is sometimes adults. Thankfully, through the Literacy Coalition, you are doing important work to improve literacy skills for Texans in all age groups. Your efforts are providing adults with the skills they need to improve their literacy, which will help them be better prepared to succeed in the workforce, improve the quality of life, and share the gift of reading with their families," she added. Abbott said over the next three decades, the Permian Basin region is expected to see substantial economic growth. "Improving adult literacy is critical to creating a skilled workforce pipeline to fuel this growth. I have great hope for the good work you are all doing. There is no force on this earth more powerful than Texans helping Texans," Abbott said. Evans, chairman of the Permian Strategic Partnership and former U.S. Commerce Secretary, introduced Abbott and said they need to continue addressing students that can't read at grade level. "Education," he said, "is tied to a strong America, and it's also at the center of a strong Permian Basin. We've got rapid, dramatic growth out here. We're going to add another couple hundred thousand jobs in the next couple of decades, which is tremendous growth," Evans said. "We have to make sure that people that are working for us out there can read so they can participate and have one of those jobs." Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin Executive Director John Trichetti said Literacy Texas was another partner for the summit. "They have regional symposiums, and the coalition has a literacy summit every other year, so they decided to combine them. The summit also included panel discussions and breakout sessions." Trichetti said more people are becoming aware of the literacy issue in the basin. During a panel discussion on development and funding of literacy programs, Abel Hanger Foundation Executive Director Mark Palmer said there are 156,000 people who were unable to read text above a second grade level, and a great number of those are completely illiterate, according to a report from AIR. Many adults in the Permian Basin are not able to access education programs due to lack of proximity, digital access, child care, or scheduling conflicts with work. Not enough options and not enough services that are delivered in such a way that they're available to the people who need it, Palmer said. The report also addresses the economic impact and turning the situation around, and the numbers are stunning, he added. Tracy Bentley, president and CEO of the Permian Strategic Partnership, said you can download the 2022 needs assessment from the Literacy Coalition website so it can be printed off and used as needed. It is just full of staggering information that also shows the opportunity that we have to work together on this important issue. The Permian Strategic Partnership was invited to be part of the coalition with the Abel Hanger and others because we know about all the workforce opportunities that our area is missing out on, Bentley said. By missing out on, I'm talking about, first of all, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars that should stay in the Permian Basin. Some of you have heard us say this, but I think it's worth repeating that this isn't just a local level. If we're not careful, this could become a national or global level issue. And here's why. Because if the Permian Basin were its own energy-producing country, it would be the third largest energy-producing country in the world, second only to Saudi Arabia and Russia, Bentley said. Given the turmoil that is going on geopolitically, the Permian Basin is a fortress of stability and economic security for the United States and for the world. So if you take that, and in the report, you read that one out of three adults in the Permian Basin is considered low or illiterate, those two things don't go together. Something's got to give there. We already talked a little bit about the economic advantage that we're missing out on and our challenges. But we also know that this is an opportunity, Bentley said. She added that with low or illiteracy, people and their families are missing out on their chance to advance. Those advancements come with health care benefits for their entire family, so that their family can stay well, so that they can go to work and school every day, Bentley said. She added that if parents are able to read, they will read to their children, which means those children are prepared to go to school. We also know that by 2040, we're going to need 190,000 jobs in the Permian region, 19 counties in West Texas, and 3 in southeastern Mexico, in order to keep producing the energy that the world and this country needs. We can decide right now, today, how we want those jobs to be filled. Either we can have them filled on a rotational basis so we have people from outside coming in and filling those jobs, and then they'll stay for 2 weeks and then go home and keep rotating, or we can say we want those jobs filled locally, Bentley said. She added that everyone needs to work together to find out how to uniquely address the issue. I think, honestly, the world is depending on us solving this issue, Bentley said. Local news roundup. Head-on crash claims four lives. Four people were killed in a head-on crash Saturday afternoon, including a 14-year-old Odessa boy. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Leo Sandova, 19, of Clint, Texas, was driving a Dodge Ram 1500 west in the eastbound lane of 42nd Street when he hit a Chevrolet Silverado near FM 1936 that was being driven by Hector Manuel Martinez Olivas, 46, of Odessa. Sandova was taken to Medical Center Hospital, where he was pronounced dead. Martinez Olivas and his passengers, Norma Estella Marquez Gonzalez, 45, and the 14-year-old were pronounced dead at the scene of the crash, which happened about 2:45 p.m. The crash remains under investigation. Earlier in the day, Carla Mendez, 21, of Odessa, was killed in a crash at 42nd Street and Tanglewood. According to the Odessa Police Department, Mendez was traveling west in the 1400 block of East 42nd shortly before 6 a.m. when, for unknown reasons, her Honda Civic veered off the roadway and struck a power pole. She was taken to a local hospital and later pronounced deceased by medical personnel. The crash is still under investigation. And an Odessan accused of targeting motorcyclists. An Odessa man was arrested late Saturday night after a couple told police he repeatedly sideswiped them as they were riding on a motorcycle and then followed them home and shot at them. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers responded with lights and sirens to the 3800 block of Merle Avenue after getting a report about the disturbance, and an officer found the suspect vehicle, a Dodge Ram 1500, traveling north on Golder Avenue near Tropicana. Officers pulled over the vehicle and ordered the driver, Larry Polanco, 31, out of the vehicle at gunpoint, the report stated. Officers found a .22-3 AR pistol in the truck and noted Polanco was unsteady, had red, glassy eyes, slurred speech, and smelled of alcohol, the report stated. Polanco was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, deadly conduct, driving while intoxicated, and unlawfully carrying a weapon. Why is Medicare's Part D IRMAA premium so high? By Tony King. Dear Tony, I am turning 65 in June, self-employed, and my income together with my wife's is over $300,000. Recently, I received a letter from Social Security telling me that my monthly Medicare Part B premium of $174.70 would double to $349.40 per month due to 2022 reported income. That was no surprise, but Social Security also said that the monthly adjustment for prescription drug coverage would be an additional $33.30 a month. What is this all about? I am in excellent health and take no prescriptions. If I do not apply for a Medicare prescription drug plan, do I still have to pay the extra $33.30? Does applying for Medicare Advantage plan, including Part D, instead of original Medicare and a Medicare supplement, help me to avoid the additional $174.70 per month for Part B and the $33.30 per month extra premium for the Medicare Part D prescription drug plan? Thank you. From Mike from Oklahoma City. Dear Tony responds, hello, Mike. Sorry, but you cannot avoid the additional IRMAA income-related monthly adjusted amount premiums in if your income is above a certain limit, no matter whether you choose to enroll in original Medicare, add a Medicare supplement with a standalone Medicare prescription drug plan Part D, or a Medicare Advantage plan Part C with a prescription drug plan, it's going to happen anyway. Enrolling in a Medicare Advantage plan instead of original Medicare with a Medicare supplement and a Medicare Part D plan does not keep Medicare or Social Security from charging the additional IRMAA premium for both Medicare Parts B and D. The IRMAA rule for Medicare Part D's additional IRMAA premium went into effect on January the 1st, 2011, and new Medicare Part B and D premiums for all income levels are released every fall. Social Security bases your rates on both your and your spouse's income, whether they are Medicare age or not. The income levels are based on individual or joint tax return yearly filings. The MAGI, the Modified Adjusted Gross Income Amount, reported on your yearly income taxes is what triggers the IRMAA increase. As you stated, Mike, your joint income is over the $300,000 and your Medicare prescription drug plan from either a Medicare Advantage with a prescription drug plan or a standalone Medicare prescription drug plan will include the additional $3,330 IRMAA premium from Medicare Part D. Mike, although you are not taking prescriptions, it is not a wise Medicare decision to not enroll in a Medicare Part D plan at the time you enroll in Medicare, because you will receive a Medicare Part D penalty when you do enroll in Part D at a later date. This penalty lasts for as long as you are on Medicare. Since you are turning 65 and self-employed, I would advise you to enroll in both Medicare Part B and a Part D prescription drug plan, whether with original Medicare, with a Medicare supplement and a standalone Part D plan, or a Medicare Advantage plan with Part D, during your Medicare initial enrollment period. To avoid a Medicare B and Part D penalty, Medicare's IEP is the 3 months before turning 65, the month you turn 65 and 3 months later. During a Tony Says Medicare consultation, we are careful to personalize your Medicare Part D planning, because once enrolled, you cannot change until the Medicare annual enrollment period, October the 15th through December the 7th. Chapter 5 of Tony's Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition explains Medicare Part D in detail. And you can contact the Tony Says Medicare team at 832-519-8664 or email info@tonisays.com for a consultation regarding your Medicare options. Tony's new Confused About Medicare video series and Medicare Survival Guide Advanced Edition is available at tonisays.com. Where did the basin's oil come from? Tradition or myth holds that the Permian Basin's rich oil and natural gas formations were made from the bodies of dinosaurs, which is an evocative answer that's more fancy than fact. In fact, the region has one of the more interesting geological histories in the world, and the answer to where all the oil and gas came from is much more complex than from the dinosaurs. Permian Basin Petroleum Association President Ben Shepard and Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners President Ed Longenecker say the fuels date back hundreds of millions of years. This can become very scientific very quickly, Shepard said. The International Commission on Stratigraphy says the natural gas or hydrocarbon deposits found in the Permian Basin are the result of marine and terrestrial entities that lived and died during the Permian period 299 to 251 million years ago. Drawing that answer out a bit more, these hydrocarbons are found in a layer cake of sedimentary foundations. Beneficially, Shepard said, the landscape had at its center a series of shallow inland seas. These inland seas were the home of a variety of simple and complex living creatures, including single-cell organisms, reefs, fish, plants, and terrestrial and complex creatures, such as animals that may have looked like dinosaurs, but actually predated the dinosaurs, he said. The Permian was the last period of the Paleozoic era. Dinosaurs lived during the Mesozoic era from around 251 to 66 million years ago. Shepard said the distinction between the Paleozoic and Mesozoic eras is made at the end of the Permian in recognition of the largest mass extinction of life recorded in the history of Earth. This mass extinction contributed to the amount of carbon material that is now trapped in those producing formations of West Texas and southeastern New Mexico, he said. Just to clarify, The earliest mammals did not appear until the state Triassic period, about 225 million years ago, and humans do not show up in the archaeological record until about 2.4 to 1.4 million years ago, or hundreds of millions of years after the end of the Permian period. Longenecker said fossil fuels were predominantly formed from decomposing plants and animals, mainly microorganisms like photoplankton and algae, over millions of years, creating the mineral-rich deposits of today. Some have speculated that John D. Rockefeller, who lived from 1839 to 1937, coined the term fossil fuels, but it actually dates back to the 1700s, he said. The geologic history and formation of hydrocarbons in the Permian Basin is complex, consisting of several distinct regions, but the area holds one of the thickest known deposits of Permian-aged rocks in the world. Citing references, Longenecker said the basin is named for the Permian period 299 million to 251 million years ago, but it traces its origins to the Precambrian tectonic events of 1.3 billion to 850 million years ago. The area recognized as a basin today was once a shallow seaway that experienced formational changes during the Paleozoic era, leading to the formation of the nearby Guadalupe Mountains and other structures in the area we recognize as the Permian Basin today, he said. The Permian Basin area accumulated deep water materials, deposits of varying sediments and rocks, with some regions even developing reefs, all of which became excellent reservoirs and source rocks for petroleum. Fossil fuels are predominantly formed from biomass, mainly microorganisms like phytoplankton and algae that have been trapped for millions of years. Vertebrate fauna like amphibians, reptiles, snepsids, and moss animals have been uncovered within the bounds of the Permian Basin as well. Synopsids were the largest terrestrial vertebrates in the Permian period, equaled only by some very big creatures called plesiosaurs at the end of the Permian. Obituaries. Linda Carol Baker of Boston passed away on October the 31st, 2020. An informal, simple, and brief memorial service will be held according to her wishes. They will begin at 11:30 a.m. on Saturday, April the 27th, graveside at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home at her family plot. Nolan W. McMarion II passed away on April the 15th at the age of 40. Viewing will be on Thursday, April the 25th, between 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Evelyn Marie Singletary passed away at the age of 90 on April the 1st. A memorial service will be held for Evelyn on Saturday, April the 27th at 10 a.m. at Crescent Park Baptist Church in Odessa. Don O. Forrest Jr., age 88, of Odessa, passed away on Thursday, April the 18th. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, April the 26th, at Sunset Memorial Gardens Chapel, 6801 Business I-20 in Odessa. Carla Marie Mendez, age 21, of Odessa, died Saturday, April the 20th. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m., April the 26th, at Life Challenge Church. Interment immediately following in American Heritage Cemetery. Terry J. Neese, age 86, of Odessa, died Saturday, April the 20th. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m., April the 25th, at Sunset Memorial Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Daisy Marie Page, age 94, of Odessa, died Friday, April the 19th. Graveside service was held 1 p.m. April the 23rd at the Sunset Memorial Gardens.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. Cancer. Breast screening is not just for celebrities. In a recent People magazine, the cover story is about Olivia Munn, who has starred in Date Night, X-Men Apocalypse, The Newsroom, and other movies, and her journey through breast cancer. But the story doesn't start here, as Munn mentions in the article. Munn talks about having a normal mammogram and normal genetic testing. However, her doctor decided to calculate her risk score and found that it was 37%. This prompted the recommendation of a breast MRI. The MRI is what found Munn's breast cancer. Now she has come out in several publications encouraging every woman to know her risk score. We at the Breast Center have thought that every woman knowing her risk score is very important for quite some time. We began our high-risk clinic in 2015, but obtained the software in 2021 for the most comprehensive risk assessment, the Tyrer-Cuzick Risk Calculator. Since then, every woman that comes through our center has her risk score assessed. Screening recommendations are then made based on the patient's risk score. For example, women that are over 20% and less than 40 years old would start their screening MRI at age 25 and screening mammogram at age 30. Women who are 40 and over would have their mammogram every year, and a supplemental MRI would be recommended if their risk score is over 20%. We also offer women with an intermediate risk score of 15 to 20% a supplemental MRI. This is a discussion with their provider. Since many of them have a first-degree relative who has had breast cancer but do not have other risk factors that put their risk over 20%. Munn's case is not an isolated case. We have diagnosed many patients with breast cancer from the MRI that had a normal mammogram 6 months earlier. This is because MRI is the most sensitive test when it comes to breast imaging. I'm sure that brings up the question, why not give everyone a breast MRI? Mammography is still the standard of care in breast imaging and sees things such as microcalcifications that no other screening modality shows. Also, doing MRIs on every woman would be cost prohibitive, and there would not be enough MRI magnets to keep up with the demand. So the best way to have the MRI available to the most appropriate patients is by assessing their risk score. Always remember that knowledge is power, and that knowledge empowers you to make the best possible decisions about your health. Tech neck. Tech neck is a pain in more than just the neck. The typical average adult head weighs approximately 10 to 12 pounds. But did you know that bending it forward at a 45-degree angle to look at a cell phone or tablet can dramatically increase your chances to have, quote, tech neck, end quote. Quote, that's like having an 8-pound bowling ball as your head, then you have 72 pounds at your elbow and 96 pounds on your shoulder, end quote, says Brian Langenhorst, industrial and ergonomics specialist at Mayo Clinic Health System in La Crosse. Quote, I probably see tech neck on a weekly basis at businesses, schools, and industry, end quote. Tech neck is any form of chronic neck or shoulder pain, soreness, or stiffness caused by poor posture while using technology, such as phones or computers. Looking down at electronic devices causes the neck muscles to strain and the shoulders to slump forward. Quote, people will notice some musculoskeletal fatigue, end quote, explains Langenhorst. Quote, they may notice pressure on nerve supply, which can have some referred pain, and pressure on nerve supply within the neck that can have referred pain within the arms and hands, end quote. Over time, this position can deform your shoulder, chest, and neck muscles and put pressure on your spine. Quote, you may have 8 to 10 hours at work on a computer, then you're home for 2 to 4 hours on a computer or on your phone. That's extremely fatiguing to your neck and body, end quote, says Langenhorst. Quote, with cell phones, we're having to bring them closer to maintain visual comfort, end quote, adds Langenhorst. Quote, what I find all too often is many people don't move enough. They are staying in a static position for extremely long periods of time, end quote. On average, people spend 3 hours and 15 minutes on their phones each day. Individuals check their phones an average of 58 times each day. Almost half, 46% of Americans believe they spend an average of 4 to 5 hours on their smartphones each day. Tips to improve tech neck. Place your screen 20 to 30 inches away from your eyes, about an arm's length. Use a computer monitor or a laptop stand to help elevate your screen to the right level, or stack some books. Sit with your head, hips, and spine stacked. Quote, my eye height should be about half an inch to 1.5 inches higher than the screen because we have a 15-degree eye gaze. When I'm looking straight ahead, my neck muscles and back muscles and my upper shoulder muscles get a chance to relax. This prevents putting uneven pressures on the nerve supply or the muscle groups, end quote, adds Langenhorst. Keep your wrists straight and your elbows bent at about 90-degree angles. Keep your knees in line with your hips and your feet flat on the floor. Health and beauty. How often should you wash your hair? To shampoo or not to shampoo? That might be your question each time you head into the shower. Dr. Don Davis, a Mayo Clinic dermatologist, says when it comes to the scalp and the hair, there's a new trend online where shampooing less is preferred. Quote, we oftentimes think about shampooing as being beneficial for the hair, but we forget that we also have to address the scalp as well, end quote, says Davis. She says if you don't regularly shampoo your hair, it's difficult for your scalp to get cleaned. Quote, and that can lead to the buildup of dead skin and oil residue on the scalp, which can lead to dermatitis or dandruff, and can be quite uncomfortable and itchy, end quote, she says. Everyone's hair texture and needs are different. However, there are some guidelines to consider when it comes time to wash your hair. Quote, for persons of color, the typical recommended shampooing regimen is once to twice a week, separated by a couple of days, so there's not dryness if you shampoo day to day, end quote, says Davis. Quote, and for people who are not persons of color, we recommend shampooing every second or third day at a minimum. And some patients can shampoo up to daily. It just depends on whether their hair needs cleansing and or their scalp needs cleansing, end quote. For those with conditions like dandruff, a different approach to hair hygiene may be needed. Meningitis. Meningococcal disease on the rise in U.S. Know the symptoms. A rise in invasive serogroup Y meningococcal disease has prompted the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to issue a health advisory for healthcare providers. Quote, meningococcal disease is a bacterial infection caused by Neisseria meningitidis. About 1 in 10 people are natural carriers of the bacteria, and it can spread to others by sharing respiratory secretions, end quote, says Dr. Matthew Binneker, director of the Clinical Virology Laboratory at Mayo Clinic. Serogroups B, C, and Y cause most diseases in the U.S., with much of the recent rise in infection driven by serogroup Y. Anyone can become infected with the bacteria. However, young children, teenagers, people over 65, and anyone with HIV or immune deficiencies tend to have the highest rates of meningococcal disease. Binneker says not everyone who becomes infected will develop meningitis, but for those who do, it can be severe. He says it's important that the public is aware of the disease and how to avoid serious illness. Preventing meningococcal disease. Quote, there are preventive steps in terms of meningococcal vaccines that are available that can help prevent the incidence of disease, end quote, says Binneker. He says it is important that people are current on their vaccinations. The CDC recommends all 11 to 12-year-olds get vaccinated with a booster dose at age 16. Talk with your healthcare team to find out if you and your family are up to date on vaccinations. Meningococcal disease can present in two forms, meningitis and a bloodstream infection. Meningitis symptoms, fever, headache, stiff neck, nausea and or vomiting, sensitivity to light, confusion. Bloodstream infection symptoms, fever, chills, fatigue, vomiting, cold extremities, severe body aches, late stage purple rash. Seek medical attention if you or a family member develop symptoms. Abortion. What's EMTALA, the patient protection law? The Supreme Court will hear arguments Wednesday in a case that could determine whether doctors can provide abortions to pregnant women with medical emergencies in states that enact abortion bans. The Justice Department has sued Idaho over its abortion law, which allows a woman to get an abortion only when her life, not her health, is at risk. The state law has raised questions about when a doctor is able to provide the stabilizing treatment that federal law requires. The federal law, called the Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act, or EMTALA, requires doctors to stabilize or treat any patient who shows up at an emergency room. What protections does EMTALA provide at an ER? EMTALA requires emergency rooms to offer a medical exam if you turn up at their facility. The law applies to nearly all emergency rooms that accept Medicare funding. Those emergency rooms are required to stabilize patients if they have a medical emergency before discharging or transferring them. And if the ER doesn't have the resources or staff to properly treat that patient, staff members are required to arrange a medical transfer to another hospital after they've confirmed the facility can accept the patient. So, for example, if a pregnant woman shows up at an emergency room concerned that she is in labor, but there is no OBGYN on staff, hospital staff cannot simply direct the woman to go elsewhere. Why was this law created? Look to Chicago in the early 1980s. Doctors at the city's public hospital were confronting a huge problem. Thousands of patients, many of them Black or Latino, were arriving in very bad condition, and they were sent there by private hospitals in the city that refused to treat them. Most of them did not have health insurance. Chicago wasn't alone. Doctors working in public hospitals around the country reported similar issues. Media reports, including one of a pregnant woman who delivered a stillborn baby after being turned away by two hospitals because she didn't have insurance, intensified public pressure on politicians to act. Congress drafted legislation with Republican Senator David Duenberger of Minnesota saying at the time, quote, "Americans, rich or poor, deserve access to quality health care. This question of access should be the government's responsibility at the federal, state, and local levels," end quote. Then President Ronald Reagan, a Republican, signed the bill into law in 1986. What happens if a hospital turns away a patient? The hospital is investigated by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. If they find the hospital violated a patient's right to care, they can lose their Medicare funding, a vital source of revenue for most hospitals to keep their doors open. Usually, however, the federal government issues fines when a hospital violates EMTALA. They can add up to hundreds of thousands of dollars. Why is the Supreme Court looking at the law? Since the Supreme Court overturned the constitutional right to an abortion, President Joe Biden, a Democrat, has repeatedly reminded hospitals that his administration considers an abortion a part of the stabilizing care that EMTALA requires facilities to provide. The Biden administration argues that Idaho's law prevents ER doctors from offering an abortion if a woman needs one in a medical emergency. But Idaho's attorney general has pointed out that EMTALA also requires hospitals to consider the health of the, quote, unborn child, end quote, in its treatment, too. What are advocates saying? Anti-abortion advocates argue that state laws banning abortion can coexist with the federal law that requires hospitals to stabilize pregnant patients in an emergency. The prominent anti-abortion group Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America, called the lawsuit in Idaho a, quote, PR stunt, end quote, in a statement to the Associated Press on Tuesday. Quote, "The EMTALA case is based on the false premise that pregnant women cannot receive emergency care under pro-life laws," end quote, said Kelsey Pritchard, the group's state public affairs director. Quote, "It is a clear fact that pregnant women can receive miscarriage care, ectopic pregnancy care, and treatment in a medical emergency in all 50 states," end quote. But many doctors say it's not as clear-cut as anti-abortion advocates claim. Idaho's state law banning abortion, except for saving the life of the mother, has left some doctors weighing if a patient is close enough to death to treat. Most other states allow doctors to perform abortions to save the health of a mother. But if the Supreme Court rules in Idaho's favor, it could invite other states to pass restrictions without that exemption. In a statement released Monday, Jack Resnick, former president of the American Medical Association, said Idaho's law forces doctors to withhold proper treatment for patients. The state's, quote, "dangerous standard cannot be applied to the real-life situations faced in emergency departments every day," end quote, Resnick said. Quote, "There is no bright line when each patient's condition suddenly reaches life-threatening and deteriorating patients don't want their physicians delaying care," end quote. Out and about, Girl Scouts recognize women of distinction. Krista Escamilla Kathy George, Valerie Sparks, and Dr. Reagan Viney were recently honored as recipients of the 32nd Annual Girl Scouts of the Desert Southwest Women of Distinction Awards. The event was held at the Petroleum Club of Midland, where guests participated in a silent auction and enjoyed cocktails upon arrival. The grand ballroom featured tables adorned with white roses, yellow daisies, baby's breath, and greenery. Holly Green of Girl Scout Troop 38823 welcomed attendees, and Carol Ann Hunt delivered the invocation. Patty Craven, CEO of the GSDSW, spoke about the impact of Girl Scouts on young girls and the importance of volunteers and mentors. Linda Lou Valerio gave an overview of the Girl Scout National Council. Dinner included beef tenderloin with mushroom wine gravy, mashed potatoes and Brussels sprouts with lemon meringue, chocolate, and coconut pies for dessert. The evening culminated with the Women of Distinction Awards presentation, where Escamilla, George, Sparks, and Viney each received an engraved crystal plaque. Oil report. In the pipeline, Moss Lake Partners proposes a new pipeline in the Permian Basin. With the Matterhorn Express pipeline set to enter service in the third quarter, attention turned to the next big gas pipeline project to carry natural gas out of the Permian Basin. According to East Daily Analytics, that question has been answered. The company reported Moss Lake Partners has started the pre-filing review process with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission for its De La Express pipeline. The proposed 42-inch, 690-mile pipeline would move up to 2 billion cubic feet per day of natural gas from the Permian Basin to Port Arthur, Texas, and Cameron Parish, Louisiana. Rob Wilson, Vice President, Product at East Daily, told the Reporter-Telegram by email that there is a need for a new pipeline. Quote, effective capacity, even after Matterhorn gets tight again, 95% utilization at the end of 2025, end quote, he wrote. Quote, part of the issue when you run this tight is that any pipeline maintenance really throws the Permian egress market off and has a huge impact on Waha prices, as we've seen recently, end quote. Permian producer growth will be uneven, depending on the ability of gas, crude, and natural gas liquid egress to provide a logistical path to the Gulf Coast all at the same time, he continued. He predicted producers will grow into Matterhorn capacity, likely faster than the market expects. This will create another bottleneck until the Saguaro Connector pipeline comes into service in 2029. Moss Lake has plans for an open house for interested shippers in May or June, according to East Daily. Jack Weeksel, senior director at East Daily, pointed out that open house is non-binding. He cautioned that before De La Express goes through the permitting process, it has to attract shippers. Wilson wrote that unlike two other proposed pipelines, the Apex from Targa Resources and the Warrior from Energy Transfer, De La would transport Permian natural gas across state lines to new liquefied natural gas export projects in Louisiana. He added it also stands out as a proposal to move liquids-rich natural gas. This, he explained, could let shippers bypass processing constraints in the Permian by moving raw natural gas to the Gulf Coast and extracting natural gas liquids closer to the Mont Belvieu fractionation market and export docks. In the proposed project schedule, Moss Lake requests FERC certify the pipeline by April 2026. Moss Lake is targeting an in-service date of July 2028 for the pipeline. The Matterhorn Express is a joint venture between Whitewater Midstream, EnLink Midstream, Devon Energy, and MPLX LP. The 580-mile line will extend from the Waha Hub to the Katy Hub near Houston. Capacity is 2.5 billion cubic feet per day, designed to deliver energy for up to 20 million homes daily, according to the owners. East Daily expects line fill on the Matterhorn to begin in July. Moss Lake Partners is a private investor in midstream assets founded by J. Alexander Blackman and headquartered in Houston. Centers for Children and Families hold fundraising gala. Scores of West Texans gathered in support of Centers for Children and Families, Centers, at their Boots, Barrels, and Beads fundraiser on April 5th at the Petroleum Club of Midland. The gala was sponsored by various corporations, foundations, and individuals in the area. raising close to $500,000 for mental health services provided by centers. The events program featured a ceremony dedicated to honoring special friends and philanthropists in the Permian Basin. Dr. Glenn Rogers, serving as honorary chair, was acknowledged as a devoted supporter of the organization and warmly welcomed to the occasion, and warmly welcomed guests to the occasion. In a surprise move, ConocoPhillips was awarded the Outstanding Partnership Award for their significant support, accepted by Hal Mead, Center's board member, and Amanda Day. Melanie Size, Marketing and Development Director, remarked, quote, "It is our goal to bring an evening of joy to all friends of Center's, and they always bring that joy back with true generosity," end quote. Embracing a Texas, Louisiana vibe, attendees were adorned with sequins, bow ties, and boots. The evening's highlights included whiskey and wine cork pulls, a traditional Louisiana cake pull sponsored by Market Street, and live auction entertainment by the Cowboy Auctioneers and the West Texas famous Current 9 band. The Petroleum Club provided a delightful mix of Texas and Louisiana cuisine, including Southern filet mignon and crab cake duo, pecan serenade pies, and Bourbon Street banana pudding. Vibrant and stunning floral displays courtesy of HEB adorned the venue, infusing it with color, with a portion of the arrangements generously donated. Christy Edwards, CEO of Centers, expressed heartfelt gratitude, stating, quote, "Mental health has become a key initiative in our community, and our patrons are a reflection of how important it truly is," end quote. She further conveyed appreciation for the community's support since 1957, enabling Centers to positively impact lives over the span of decades. Since 1957, Centers for Children and Families has believed that strong, emotionally healthy families make a strong, healthy community. It is designed to be an affordable resource for individuals and families facing various stages of need. Centers offers individual, marital, and family counseling services. Counseling is provided at reduced or no cost. Most insurance plans and Medicaid are accepted. Service is offered for ages 3 and up for group or individual sessions. No referral from a doctor or agency is required. Counseling emphasizes support and healing of individuals and families facing challenges.
Feds versus oilmen. Who wins in the end? Landgraf, Perryman say numerous factors in play. The story was written by Bob Campbell. Considering the battle royale that has been waged between federal regulatory agencies and the energy industry since President Biden took office in January 2021, the question arises, who will end up winning? State Representative Brooks Landgraf and Waco economist Ray Perryman cite a number of factors in saying the industry will overcome and prevail like it always has through more than a century of triumphs and travails. Quote, "Despite the regulatory hurdles posed by agencies like the EPA, the resilience of the Permian Basin underscores the lasting economic strength of the energy sector," said Landgraf, an Odessa Republican. "Oil and gas have long served as indispensable drivers for global prosperity, lifting billions from poverty and cementing America's stature as a global leader. While certain administrations may adopt hostile stances toward fossil fuels, the unyielding spirit of the oil patch persists and the demand for these commodities remains," end quote. Landgraf said the people who do the hard physical work of the oil field are the real core of its success. Quote, "Amidst the present challenges, it's crucial to acknowledge the dedication of the men and women in the oil patch whose relentless efforts and innovation continue to propel the industry forward," he said. "Their resilience not only ensures the industry's sustainability, it also shapes our energy landscape for the better. In the face of adversity, history has demonstrated that the energy industry's ingenuity and adaptability will prevail. Ultimately, I am confident that market forces will affirm the enduring value of oil and gas in fueling economic growth and meeting the world's energy needs," end quote. Perryman said, is, quote, "It's frustrating when politics and even good intentions get in the way of effective policy. but it happens in many contexts involving both parties. In situations such as the one confronting the energy industry at the moment, the ultimate outcome is predictable, but the path to get there will likely be problematic, he said. Perryman said the missing element that's frequently overlooked in current policy conflicts is that billions of people around the world will need the energy provided by the oil and gas industry for decades to come. Quote, while climate change is a critical issue that must be dealt with, the pace of increase in the demand for power and other forms of energy simply cannot be met without the responsible production of oil and gas, he said. Although this fact is often ignored in the debate, it is certainly not a secret. Forecasts by the U.S. Department of Energy, under widely varying assumptions, demonstrate ongoing and increasing demand, as do the forecasts from our firm and many others. And all of the above approach will be needed with responsible development of the conventional fuels that are crucial to sustaining geopolitical stability and promoting economic growth, end quote. Perryman said adequate energy supplies are essential to eliminating the extreme poverty around the globe that developed nations will find it increasingly hard to tolerate. Quote, it is also highly unlikely that people in Europe will be compelled to indefinitely rely on the whims of Russia to avoid freezing in the winter due to insufficient natural gas when readily available alternatives such as U.S. LNG are available, he said. Over time, the fallout from restrictions on the responsible production of energy in the United States will come to dominate the decision process, although there will likely be some unfortunate machinations in the interim, end quote. He said it is important to reduce the emissions profile of the production and use of oil and natural gas at every stage of the process, but that can be accomplished with substantial progress already having been made. Quote, the bottom line is simply that when something has to happen, it will, Perryman said. A solution will be found that includes domestic oil and gas production, although we are likely to see a variety of short-sighted decisions, knee-jerk reactions, political maneuvers, and other wrong turns along the way. These detours, in essence, create inefficiencies, cost escalation, distorted risk profiles, and unnecessary delays in achieving the ultimate goals of resolving the climate crisis while providing the energy resources needed to promote economic growth and human progress, end quote.
This day in history. Today's highlight in history, on April the 24th, 1995, the final bomb linked to the Unabomber exploded inside the Sacramento, California offices of a lobbying group for the wood products industry, killing chief lobbyist Gilbert B. Murray. Theodore Kaczynski was later sentenced to 4 lifetimes in prison for a series of bombings that killed 3 people and injured 29 others. And on this date in 1877, federal troops were ordered out of New Orleans, ending the North's post-Civil War rule in the South. In 1915, in what's considered the start of the Armenian Genocide, the Ottoman Empire began rounding up Armenian political and cultural leaders in Constantinople. In 1960, rioting erupted in Biloxi, Mississippi, after black protesters staging a wade-in at a whites-only beach were attacked by a crowd of hostile white people. In 1961, in the wake of the failed Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba, the White House issued a statement saying that President John F. Kennedy bears sole responsibility for the events of the past few days. In 1967, Soviet cosmonaut Vladimir Komarov was killed when his Soyuz-1 spacecraft smashed into the Earth after his parachutes failed to deploy properly during re-entry. He was the first human space flight fatality. In 1980, the United States launched an unsuccessful attempt to free the American hostages in Iran, a mission that resulted in the deaths of 8 U.S. servicemen. In 1990, the Space Shuttle Discovery blasted off from Cape Canaveral, Florida, carrying the $1.5 billion Hubble Space Telescope. In 2005, Pope Benedict XVI formally began his stewardship of the Roman Catholic Church. The former Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger said in his installation homily that as pontiff, he would listen to the will of God in governing the world's 1.1 billion Catholics. In 2013, in Bangladesh, a shoddily constructed 8-story commercial building housing garment factories collapsed, killing more than 1,100 people. In 2017, 2 inmates received lethal injections on the same gurney, about 3 hours apart, as Arkansas completed the nation's first double execution since 2000, just days after the state ended a nearly 12-year hiatus on administering capital punishment. Dear Abby, my husband and I live in a lovely older neighborhood and have enjoyed wonderful neighbors over many years. The homes are close together, with windows often left open in spring, summer, and fall, as large shade trees keep our homes cool. A couple of years ago, our longtime next-door neighbors moved, and a new neighbor, a single woman, moved in. She was quiet, and we would occasionally visit in the yard. Well, over the last few months, a problem has developed. This neighbor has a new male friend who is there much of the time. Since the new friend's arrival, loud moaning sounds frequently emanate from her home. It quickly went from a bit funny to shocking to annoying. It's unbelievable how loud and prolonged the moaning sounds are. The oh gods, the slapping and spanking sounds, not to mention the frequent back-to-back sessions. Other neighbors hear it and have commented, so it's not just we who are offended. One neighbor thought someone was in distress and almost called the police until another neighbor told her what it was. It has awakened us and kept us up at night. Also of concern is that there are small children among our nearest neighbors. Abby, is there anything you can suggest I do so our neighbor keeps her private business private without embarrassing or offending her? I would sure like to put an end to the auditory assault. Dear Abby answers, approach your neighbor privately and inform her that the sounds of her lovemaking are creating a disturbance, not only for you, but also for the other neighbors. Tell her that one of them nearly called the cops, but someone was able to stop the person. Then suggest that when she entertains her gentleman caller, they close the windows because not only are people scandalized, but there are children who can hear what's going on. Then cross your fingers. If the noise isn't abated, do inform the authorities. Perhaps they can be more persuasive. And another dear Abby, I've been married to my husband for 40 long years. Whenever I do something wrong, I get a note on the kitchen counter. This has gone on for years and years. This is the note I woke up to this morning. Why did you leave the light on in the garage? To burn it out to see what I would do? I will do nothing except go to the garage in daylight. He always makes it seem like I purposely do things. I'm tired of being treated like this. What is his problem? Dear Abby responds, I will assume you have addressed this directly with your husband. For whatever reason, he is hesitant to communicate with you face to face, which is why he resorts to notes on the kitchen counter. Instead of openly expressing his annoyance, he expresses it indirectly, which is the definition of passive aggression. The next time it happens, call him on it and confront him directly. You can write to Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.